At the end of every month, Kern State revisits environmental developments that have made the news. In October, we learned about the EPA's investigation into the Flint water crisis. In this interim report, the U.S. Inspector General said EPA, quote, had authority and sufficient information to issue an emergency order protecting Flint residents from lead-contaminated water as early as June 2015. The EPA did not intervene until January of 2016. Great Lakes journalist and Current State contributor Gary Wilson joins me now from Chicago to break this down. Welcome back, Gary.
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Help us break this down. First of all, why this interim report?
Well, the interim report, in technical terms, the purpose of the interim report was to issue what is known in EPA parlance as, and I'm quoting here, a management alert. And that is to tell the leadership, especially in the EPA's office, the Great Lakes office in Chicago, that it didn't act with the necessary immediacy or recognize the seriousness of the issue in Flint. Further, to alert the management that they needed to take immediate action to properly prioritize issues like Flint. Now, practically speaking, it was a public and what the New York Times called a, and I'm quoting again here, a pointed rebuke of the EPA's handling of the Flint water crisis. So two messages there.
What were EPA officials doing in this seven-month period?
Well, EPA took the track of, and this has all been discussed and documented elsewhere many times, but EPA took the track of trying to work with Michigan's DEQ while they sought a legal opinion about their authority. That was a process that lasted from the spring of 2015 until November 2015. And then Regional Administrator Susan Hedman told the Detroit News in January of 2016 that the roles were clear, that this was a state responsibility. Now, the Inspector General's report clearly rebuts that position, and I'd add that Hedman resigned later in January of 2016.
What was the impact of the delay on Flint citizens? How much better could they have been served by an earlier EPA intervention?
Well, in this case, Mark, 7 months, a seven-month delay is significant, and I believe the impact was significant. More people were likely exposed to lead for longer periods of time. Flint residents were denied resources and services for 7 months that, you know, could have helped prevent and mitigate the suffering they were experiencing. And here's an example. In January of 2016, when the EPA did use its authority, EPA staff descended on Flint. And it's interesting to look at the EPA's Twitter feed at that point. In a 60-day period, I counted 70-plus tweets with pictures of EPA staffers in homes testing for lead, helping with filters, answering questions. You know, these are all things that could and should have been done 7 months earlier. And I'd add that EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy was on site, adding the gravitas of her cabinet-level position to the situation. So there was a lot lost in that 7 months.
How did the EPA respond to the IG report?
Well, they issued a statement saying that they had already taken action based on what the Inspector General put in the report about serious issues like Flint. And there was an aspect of the statement that was slightly defiant. The EPA said that it intervened in Flint as soon as it knew Michigan was failing. And that, according to their position, that would be January of 2016. Now, that runs counter to the spirit and letter, the letter of the Inspector General report. And I'd add here, Mark, it's important to note that the Justice Department, the Federal Justice Department, is still conducting a criminal investigation of this issue. So I suspect people are being careful what they say.
Great Lakes journalist and Current State contributor Gary Wilson joins me here for our monthly Great Lakes Month in Review. How does this impact the discussion of responsibility, culpability? For example, does it lessen the responsibility of the Snyder administration or the DEQ, for example, for the Flint crisis?
No, it absolves Michigan of nothing, Mark. This report only dealt with the EPA's lack of action and its failure to use its authority in the crisis. Governor Snyder still has responsibility and accountability for the DEQ and his own personal actions. And Attorney General Bill Schuette is responsible on the legal front, and he's been very aggressive at taking legal action. So Michigan's sins remained Michigan's sins.
You contacted, though, Governor Snyder's office and that of U.S. Representative Dan Kildee. Flint is in Mr. Kildee's district, of course. What was their reaction?
Well, Anna Heaton from the governor's office repeated the often used statement that Flint was the result of a failure at all levels of government. That's their standard statement. But she did go on to say that the governor was pleased that other agencies, in this case the U.S. EPA, were looking at process improvements similar to what Michigan is doing. And Heaton also noted that there are other cities. That's important because other cities besides Flint could be vulnerable to the same types of problems.
Let's move.
Representative Kildee, real quick, said it was he was frustrated that the EPA compounded Michigan's failure by not moving more aggressively.
Let's move on to a really interesting development here. The headline reads, "Toxic blob headed for Cleveland." This sounds like a 50s sci-fi movie, but the blob is actually a mass of toxic sediment in Lake Erie, apparently a remnant of 1970s-era pollution. How is this toxic mass exactly threatening Cleveland?
You're right, Mark. A 1950s sci-fi movie. It's actually toxic sediment, as you said. And the problem now, all these years later, is that it's moving, and there's potential that it could be moving closer to the water intake cribs, just a few miles off of Cleveland's shore. So it's a threat. Nobody knows for sure exactly what's going to happen, but you know, there are failures from the 70s keep on giving.
Do officials have a plan to deal with it?
Not really. That's what's being debated now. It could be capped, or the fallback is if it reaches the intake cribs, it's to treat the water. So neither of those options are optimal.
But, you know, Lake Erie was recently designated by U.S. and Canadian officials as the only Great Lake in, quote, poor and deteriorating condition. This can't help the lake's reputation, I imagine.
No, Mark, as I said, the environmental sins of the 70s keep on giving related to Lake Erie. Between the toxic algae and the headlines about a toxic blob on the move, you can imagine how that appears outside the region. And I think it's timely to note that no amount of World Series karma can improve Lake Erie's poor quality or the perception of it.
Well, that's a logical bridge into my next question. As a Chicago guy, I've got to ask you how big of a Cubs fan you are and how it feels there in the city for the Cubs to be in the World Series.
Well, I'm going to surprise you, Mark. I have a lot of respect for this particular Chicago Cubs team. It's been a delight to watch, but my roots are in Detroit, the Tigers, and they're not in it, so I've got to stay with the American League, so I'm rooting for the Indians.
We want to thank Gary Wilson. Once a month, Gary checks in with us. He's our Great Lakes journalist and commentator and current state contributor here. It's been our Great Lakes Month in Review. Gary, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Earlier this month on our environmental segment, we learned about the recent discovery of an invasive species, the New Zealand mud snail, in Michigan's Au Sable River. First, we heard from a member of the Anglers of the Au Sable, who feels the Michigan Department of Natural Resources was slow to respond to inspect a fish hatchery near two spots where the snails were discovered, upstream and downstream. Then we heard from DNR Director Keith Cray, who responded to those assertions and offered his perspective. Both interviews can be found at WKAR.org. A few listeners feel both interviews still left too much suspicion unfairly hanging over the operators of the grayling hatchery. Some said the hatchery ought to be considered a victim of the New Zealand mud snail, not a propagator or a vector. Laura Campbell of the Michigan Farm Bureau is one of them.
A land-based farm, if they get invaded by an invasive species, normally the state will come in and provide them assistance and all kinds of technical help and sometimes even funding to help them get rid of that species. We think that aquaculture, that is people who farm for fish, should be afforded the same courtesy, especially when it's found that they are not the cause of that invasive species entering that area. They are a victim of this species and need to be assisted, not being given the blame.
Current State aims to offer diverse viewpoints on issues. Never hesitate to contact us at currentstate@wkar.org. That's currentstate@wkar.org. Or call me, Mark Bayshore, anytime, 517-884-4776.